Let me take you back now to 1987. In fact, the 16th of May, 1987, Starships, Nothing's Going to Stop Us Now, was at number one. It had knocked off La Isla Bonita by Madonna. In the cinemas, Platoon had just opened, but the big film of the year was still showing, Crocodile Dundee. Margaret Thatcher was about to win her third term as our Prime Minister, so she was still Prime Minister. And it was a year with some tragedy, of course. The Great Storm happened in October, but earlier that year, the King's Cross fire had seen big changes in the tube system in London. But the big event for sporting fans was on, in fact, the 16th of May 87. One of the greatest cup finals of all time, according to John Motson, was played. I remember it as if it was yesterday. An amazing game between Spurs. It was their third appearance in 5 years in the FA Cup final. They won the previous two against Coventry City. And Coventry City, in the end, won it in extra time, but their first goal was scored by an absolute footballing legend. He's our special guest this morning. Let me take you back now. 16th of May 1987. Coventry City 1-0 down. Dave Bennett does this.
Ouchin. Bennett! David Bennett! 1-1! Look at John Sillett. They're level after 9 minutes. Greg Downs curled the ball in. Houchin with the flick on, a lovely header. Clements went down, but Bennett was quicker and scored. This is the best start to an FA Cup final for many years.
And he wasn't wrong. It was an amazing start, an amazing final. It went to extra time. And the man who gave us that opening goal and a lot more thrills beside fantastic footballer, genuinely nice bloke, Dave Bennett, joins us now. And his latest book is called Benno, My Life in Football, published by our friends at Pitch, with a foreword by the man you just mentioned, Coventry City's then manager, John Sillett. And I'm delighted to say Dave Bennett joins us now. Good morning, Benno. Thanks for doing this for us, sir. That must take you right back there. I mean, that was an amazing cup final, matey.
Yeah, it's just like one of the games where, you know, with the COVID going on, it's the first game that showed. So it just goes to show it's one of the classic cup finals that's ever been.
It was an absolute belting time for football as well, because, of course, we were coming out of the kind of, you know, not being in Europe, but we also still had amazing support. I think before you went to Leeds and knocked Leeds out of that FA Cup run, I think you got to Sheffield Wednesday, Coventry City, and you took 15,000 fans with you, you say in the book. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was really good. We was having a good season, to be honest, because the season before we had to win the last couple of games to stay up, and then all of a sudden we just clicked that season. So we was doing well in the league. So our away support was tremendous.
And of course, it wasn't your first time in the FA Cup final, because I think back in 81, you'd run out for Man City. And I believe I'm right in saying you were the first Manchester player from either team, first black player, person of black heritage, to play in an FA Cup final for either Manchester side.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's at the time, you don't know about these accolades. You just go out and try and do yourself proud, your family, and everybody who knows you. And you just try and win the game. It's not till afterwards that you realise you are breaking down barriers in more ways than one.
And I must say, Dave, your book is a love. I mean, we talk about a lot of books on the show. We do 3 or 4 a week. Yours is really different for sporting autobiography, because you've not only, you know, got the details, you've got some great anecdotes, some very funny stories we'll get to, but the photographs in it are absolutely amazing. It's like we've been given a peek at your family album. Who cares? Did you keep? I mean, the lovely first photo, I'll show it to my producer through the glass there. There's Dave with his mum and dad and his little brother, Gary, also a fine player. I mean, look at that. That takes you right back to, I mean, that would have been, I suppose, late 50s, early 60s, when you and your brother, very smart suits on, but with short trousers, Dave Bennett.
Yeah. Well, we did go to school in short pants in them days, you know. So, but my dad was an ex-tailor, so he liked us to dress up, as you well see in the photograph. And he made sure that we always dressed up, especially we had to go to Sunday school on a Sunday. So he made sure you wear your smart clothes on a Sunday. And the minute you come back, you had to take them straight off.
Now, the book's also about, as well as the kind of triumphs in your career, it's also about some of the kind of knife-edge moments. You mentioned one already. Coventry City, for a few seasons when you were with them, were a real relegation-dodging side. That must have been very tough mentally and physically on the players.
Yeah, because you were looking for the right combination, and we were having change of managers all the time, and then you're moving around and you're still getting to know certain people, because when I signed for Coventry City, I was going there thinking that Gary Thompson and the young lad, Thomas, Steve Hunt, all the other players who were there who were young at the time, but that you was going to play with them, because you've already played against them, being in the Central League at Manchester City. You would have thought, yes, we can build something here. And then all of a sudden we had a turnover of, what, maybe 15, 16 players, and maybe even more.
And of course, Coventry City was at the time still very much under the guidance of Jimmy Hill, who was an incredibly foresighted field. People remember him now mainly as a TV commentator. He transformed football. It was his idea, I think, wasn't it? 3 points for a win. But also, you say in the book how cutting edge he was, how off the moment he was with things like training facilities for Coventry.
Yeah, that's right. He wanted to, he was a keep fit fanatic in a sense, wanted to change things in more ways than one. It just coincided with that. I had that with Malcolm Allison at Manchester City, because he always believed that we used to come in and start training at 9 o'clock in the morning and day of the game, because apparently you're not fully awake for 3 hours. The only problem was when it comes to the last 20 minutes of the game, we were tired.
Yeah, I hadn't thought that one through, had they, really? I mean, what were they made of? I mean, I hate it when they're 8 o'clock kickoffs on a Saturday night. I know it's quite rare. You'd have been able to lie in bed till 2 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon for that one. And people talk about the game being more physical in those days, you know, defenders, midfielders getting away with more, maybe. But you had a particularly nasty encounter, I mean, you know, collision, a clattering, with Peter Shilton, didn't you, I think, when he was playing for Derby, you mentioned in the book.
Yeah, that's right. Like you say, them days you could tackle from behind. And what happened, I had a coach at Manchester City called, great guy called Dave Ewing. And he always, them days, you didn't have substitute goalkeepers. So he always said to me, if there is a 50-50 with the goalkeeper, do the goalkeeper, because the goalie is going to come and do you. So, and if you injure the goalkeeper, you've got a good chance of winning, because they haven't got a reserve team one. So, no, it's just 50-50. I think nothing was meant by it. It's just that seeing the ball went for it. And because of the pitch at the time was so slippy because of the sand, his head is carried through. It slipped through and it hit my shin. And I had a fracture.
Oh dear. Ooh. And also, I mean, there's some great photographs in there. One wonderful photograph I'm looking at right now is you going for the same ball as John Barnes. You say two tricky wingers battle for the ball. Who are the sides that you, I suppose, were most of a challenge for you, but you actually thought, you know, you look back and you think they were remarkable players. Who were the top players for you to play against in those days, Dave?
Oh, there was loads of top players then. There's you go on. Because you've got to remember some of the teams that was in the first division. You look at the sides now, you think Bristol City was up there, yeah, and Crystal Palace, well, they were in the second division. So there's some great players, teams around, you know. Like I said, I ended up playing with Colin Bell and Dennis Stewart. They took me under their wing and taught me a lot of things, Brian Kidd, et cetera, et cetera. So it was just great to be amongst these players, and to play against them was second to none. Like, I can remember a great game. I thought it was always like a Rolls-Royce. Martin Buchan, played against him, it was just like, you know, second gear we never got out of. And Colin Todd, another lad, played at the back. The second gear was just remarkable, playing against them and learning from them. Because when I played against them again, I knew what they were like. So I had an idea how to beat them or combat them.
And I mean, one bit that really struck a chord with me was, because I'm a West Ham fan, I know tragedy and suffering in my life. And a couple of seasons ago, we nearly got knocked out of the FA Cup by the Kenilworth Harriers, I think they were called. And of course, it happened to you when you were at Coventry against the team that finally made it, you know, into the EFL. They've now dropped back down. Sutton United, I remember, was it 89? Not Coventry City, you mentioned in the book, not Coventry City. That was tough, was it not, to kind of mentally, and from what the fans gave you after that?
Well, it's ironically, because when I was at Man City, we got knocked out by Halifax, and I played in the game, and we could have got knocked out. And then the following year, we get to the cup final. So you got one low, and then the next minute, you've got an eye, and then I go to Coventry City, and the same happens to me there. So, you know, that's the ups and downs of football, as they say.
And the book's got a fantastic forward, opening words by John Sillett, who was your manager for the FA Cup final win. And you say in the book you've become friends with him, which must be very difficult for players and managers, because of you both like the races, racehorses. Is that still part of your life, Dave?
Yeah, that's right. At the time then, John Sillett had a connection with Barry Hills, so we used to always go to, when I had a day off, we'd go racing. The others used to go and play golf, so I'd go to racing. And at the time then, as a black guy growing up, there weren't many black guys who went racing or seen around the racetrack as much as I was, to the extent that we used to go down to the stable. We had a visit down there all the time, so we got very well to know some of the jockeys. So I do like the racing.
And I mentioned the fact that Coventry City was very much in the forerunners of changes. And I think John Sillett had a big hand in that, because while people talk now about playing out from the back and stuff, John Sillett was one of the first people to actually bring that, I think, to the top two in English football, because that's what he'd done with the Coventry City youth team. And that's what he brought. I mean, it wasn't really the kind of long ball down the middle with John Sillett at all, was it? It was find Cyril and let him keep the ball at his feet and do what he could with it.
Yeah, because we like to play off the front. That was his theme. We had to play off the front. If we can see, can we pass it forward and utilise Cyril's his strength? So when we can knock it into him, he'll hold it up and we can make runs off him and make third man running. So we had to utilise his strength. So we, as we say now, we used to play off the front. Now you play with maybe one or two strikers or a guy behind him. But it's still the same thing. He's still got the same foundation or the same theory. You want to get that ball in the net, how you do it. It's you know, people have their different ways. But at the same time, you've got to attack them sooner or later. And it's how you attack them, where you attack them, and which way you go about it.
And the book starts with a fantastic recreation of what it felt like for you when you run out for the very first time. It's the 14th of April, 1979, I think you say, 75 minutes on the clock, and you're subbed onto the pitch for Tommy Booth comes off for Man City, and you go onto the pitch, 40,000 fans watching, and I think your folks were there as well, weren't they?
Yeah, everyone's there. You're going through the grades, you're going playing in the Central League, then all of a sudden you get told that you're sub, and you think, well, are you going to get on or where you're not going to get on or what you're going to do, what you're not going to do. So obviously when you get the call to go on, you're 6 foot six, and then I get on and you're running around like, as you do, quite sprightly, and I get fouled. And as I get fouled and the guy picks me up, he says to me, use the words BB, if you do that again,
yeah,
I'll break your legs. So all of a sudden, me being 6 foot six turned out to be 3 foot six. And to this day, I always say, if I ever see that guy again, I don't know whether to punch him in the face or shake his hand, because that's when I realised this is what it's all about.
Big boys football there, wasn't it? But with the unacceptable overtones and the racism, which you seem in the book, you seem to kind of not brush off you, but you don't let them set you back. But there must have been a cost at the time for that for you emotionally, Dave, at the very least.
Yeah, you at the time there, you know, you're a local lad from the ghetto, as they say, because I'm from there, Moss Side, and the black community, and my brothers and sisters and the family, was well known. Obviously, when we started to play for Manchester City, we got more known, along with my brother. So the black community used to come out and support us. So because of the racial tension then, them days, we used to get a lot of it going on, but I did not know at the time I was breaking down barriers. I just went on as you do. With the grounding I've got of my mum and dad, they told me what to do and what not to do and what was right and what was wrong. And so sometimes you have to turn the other cheek, but you can only turn the other cheek for so long.
And you'd also been a bit of a good cricket player, rugby player, because I didn't realise until I read the book that you must have passed your 11 plus. You made it to a grammar school back in the day.
Yeah, don't tell anyone because they don't believe it.
It's interesting because it's a real social shift, you know. I mean, I'm of an age with you. I'm slightly older than you, I think. But when I talk to my kids about those days, and they're all in their 20s now, they don't kind of accept some of the things I was talking about. Like, you know, pubs used to shut in the afternoon and they wouldn't open again until, you know, Sunday. They'd shut at 2 and open at 7. But also, at 11, you were separated from some of your friends, some of your best mates, and sometimes even younger, older brothers, if you passed the 11 plus. It was a very strange time when we look back on it.
Yeah, it was. I think there's a chapter in the book about the time when I'm playing football, and them days we were called coloured. Now you've got the younger generation up to now, the age of 14, don't know any colour.
Yeah.
They call us as we black, but them days we were known as coloured, you know. So it's good to know or say to some of these, the generation now, about our history, what we had to go through and what we had to stand up for. And some come into it and say, oh, it weren't that bad, it weren't this bad. They get a little bit of racism now and they try and put it under the carpet. But them days, it was really, I can tell you, pretty bad.
And also the money involved in the game. Well, it seems, I mean, at the time, I remember it was 82, I bought my first house. It was in Exeter, little two-bedroom place. I was working as a trainee reporter at a local paper. That first house cost me £15,000. Now, you can barely get a decent car for that these days, but you say in the book, well, you've been beaten by Spurs when you ran out for the Man City Cup final. They won in 81-82. Bit of payback coming, but you said that Spurs were on a, I think, 17 grand a man for appearing in the final. Again, you could buy a house in parts of the country for that amount of money, whereas the Coventry players, I think you were on, what, 2 or 3 grand for the appearance. Yeah. But that was that must have seemed at the time like an absolute fortune.
Yeah, because you sign a contract, don't you? You sign a contract at the start of the year with bonuses. And because Coventry City have never been there before, they would not know what bonuses to pay or what, you know, we could evaluate and the way the game was going. Because you've got to remember the teams we played them days and we played, we're all good teams and we played them away from home. So it was clocking up, but we signed a contract at the start of the season, so you weren't going to get any more, or we weren't going to get looked after. So we took it because Coventry weren't, say, one of the top teams them days. You know, they weren't in the top half, or they weren't seem to be doing good. We was always looked at a struggling side. So to all of a sudden our fortunes to turn around and change and become a force in the next couple of years, it was quite difficult, but that's what it was.
It's also, you know, one of the great kind of tragedies, isn't too strong a word actually, because there are tragedies in football, in part, in some part due to fans, in other parts just due to, you know, terrible organisation, things like Hillsborough, dreadful behaviour or incompetence by the police. But that meant that you weren't playing in Europe with Coventry City, even though you won the FA Cup final. How big a regret is that looking back, would you say, Dave?
Massive, massive regret, because the players, we deserve to be playing in Europe, and because of Liverpool. But I don't know the reason, the final reason why we weren't allowed to play in Europe. Maybe because we weren't big enough side, and we might not generate enough whatever TV rights or whatever you want to look at it. So I don't know the exact reason for it, but we should have took our opportunity. If we got knocked out, we got knocked out. But it would have been a great, not just for myself and the players, also for the club and Coventry.
It's also a lovely bit of the book, again, a sidelight into a different era, which is, you say, you know, you worked very hard on the pitch, trained very hard. You know, you use pre-season, getting fit all the time, staying fit. But you still went out and celebrated with a drink. But you say in the book, but we couldn't have, if we were found drinking pints, we'd be fined. But instead you say, we drank halves. We drank as much, we just drank it quicker, we partied hard. So it's kind of, I don't think you get many admissions like that from current players. I know of two or three of them I have a drink every now and again, but it was just a different culture at the time, wasn't it, really? Celebration was part of the game, and a big night out, you kind of earned it.
Well, he believed in camaraderie, and we've got a unique camaraderie now. As we talk with the lads who live locally, we meet up every 3 or 4 weeks, and we're meeting up now in the next week or so on the 6th of October, all the local lads, and it's 37 years since we won the cup, but we still meet up now, seven or eight of us, or we can get as many as we can of the group or the squad to meet up, and we still talk and chat and still try and put the game right in more ways than one, and what he did on that day and what he didn't do on that day, and we have a drink when it, so. But George was always the disappearing way, in the sense that he made sure that we had to drink halves. You had to make sure you was clean shaven.
Yeah,
you had your tie. But like it says, the problem was when you drink halves, you drink them quicker than a pint.
And there's a wonderful bit in the book. I mean, the book is a great read, folks, and especially as Dave Bennett is the author, along with Rich Chamberlain. It's called Benno, My Life in Football, forward by John Sill. It's a great read, published by Pitch. And there's a wonderful bit in the book when you talk about that after you've won the FA Cup, gone to extra time, and you say you went up to the gantry, and there's Jimmy Hill. He's commenting, I presume, for the BBC. And, of course, it had been his dream just to see Coventry at Wembley doing that. And he said, you know, he wanted to hear the fans sing, was it Play Out Sky Blues? Was that the song at the time?
Yeah, it was the song that, I think it was the Eton Bolt song that he put the words to it. And it was his dream, not only to see us in the cup final, to have us sing that song. So all we wanted to do was get back down off the gantry, get into the bar to see our families and have a drink.
Yes, and maybe play another song along, which we're going to play a burst of you now for you now, because you also made it, I think, on a Blue Peter, maybe not Top of the Pops, but I think you're on Blue Peter with the Coventry City squad, because you had a single out, did you, which reached the lofty heights, Dave Bennett, you're almost a pop superstar, of 61 in the charts. Do you remember recording this? I think it's called Go For It, wasn't it, the Coventry City song?
I think we should. I think we're in the top 10 in the top of the box, weren't we?
I think you were the week after the FA Cup final, but before, I think Spurs had a single out as well. It's almost compulsory in those days that people had singles out. And you mentioned all that in the book, and the book's got a lovely structure, which is kind of based around some of the photographs in the book. So are they what came first for you, Dave? Did you want to pull out a kind of picture book first, a photographic book?
Yeah, that's right. I pulled out the book first. It was a picture of all pictures and stories from my career, and the guy who done it for me, Bob the Book, you call him, he put it in order, and I showed a few people, and they said I should get it some words put to it. So I had a few people, and I had a guy called Steve Phelps who wrote a lot of books for Coventry City. So and at the time when we was writing it, the story come out about Black Lives Matter, so a lot of the little bit of the racism, you thought people would think, oh, why is he writing that for? Because, you know, the racism come out, we don't need to raise that head again. And then while we were start finishing off that, COVID struck us, you know, we had COVID. Yeah. And bless the poor guy who was writing it, Steve Phelps, he lost his wife during COVID. Yeah. So I had to wait another couple of years. And now it's finished, and hopefully, you know, it'll not only do me justice, do my family justice.
Well, it's a remarkable book. It covers some of the darker moments in football as well. We're talking Sheffield and Hillsborough and that kind of thing, the Hillsborough disaster. But it's also a fantastic read, written by Dave Bennett, along with Rich Chamberlain, who we just mentioned. It's called Benno, My Life in Football. Great photographs, great four by John Sillett. And it's not just for fans of Coventry City, far from it. Anyone who wants to know more about the 80s, this is a great slice of social history as well as being a very funny read as well. And a great book for football fans generally. Trust me, somebody in your life wants this book, mate. So Christmas isn't far away. That was